Number 67 to 70. Table Talk Parables. The four parables, Ass or Ox in Pit, Luke 14 verse 5, The Lowest Place, verses 7 to 11, Rules for Hosts, verses 12 to 14, and The Great Supper, verses 16 to 24, are closely connected both in origin and in their meaning. They were all spoken on the same occasion, and all the circumstances associated with them must be kept in mind. The 14th chapter of Luke contains a very interesting record of a visit Jesus paid to the house of one of the chief Pharisees. This ruler invited Jesus to a meal, and the circumstances produce some of the most interesting table talk ever spoken. It was a Sabbath party, very common among the Jews in the first century, and often marked by luxury which became proverbial. The attitude of the Pharisees to Jesus is surprising. He so frequently had denounced their hypocrisy, and they had manifested such a bitter hatred for his exposures of their follies, that we might have expected they would avoid any close association with him. Doubtless they varied as individuals, and after all, the interest aroused by Jesus was of a compelling character. His enemies could not ignore him. Many would be sure to seek some first-hand contact with Jesus, while yet not willing to extend an open friendship towards him. Luke says that at this meal they watched him. There is watching in order to learn, and a malevolent watching that springs from sinister feelings. The latter ruled here. A man suffering from dropsy was present. Admission was easily gained to a house in Palestine, and uninvited people could follow Jesus into the house. We're not told anything which points to the man's presence being a trap planned by the Pharisees, but seeing him there, they quickly wondered what Jesus would do. It was the Sabbath. Would he again break the Sabbath laws by healing the man? Jesus answered their unspoken musing with a question. Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath day? Jesus submitted himself to questioning, but he also asked questions, generally very disconcerting questions for his opponents. The question being answered, criticism was silenced in advance, and Jesus healed the man. Parable 67, Ass or Ox in Pit, Luke 14, verse 5. Another question followed, which was a challenge to his hearers on the ground of their own attitude to the Sabbath, and at the same time a justification of what he had done. Which of you shall have an ass or an ox fallen into a pit, and will not straightway pull him out on the Sabbath day? Verse 5. They knew what they would do under such circumstances. Self-interest on their part would lead to action. But Jesus was not moved by self-interest, but by consideration for the needs of the sick and troubled. The question is a parable. The sick, the diseased, the sinners were so many sheep that had fallen into pits. Jesus, the shepherd, for their sakes, lifted them out. Another lesson based on attention to the needs of animals is recorded in chapter 13, verse 15. The words are illustrations, but they also have a parabolic significance. See for explanation of the underlying significance the sheep in pit. Matthew 12, verse 11. Parable 68. The Lowest Place, Luke 14, verse 7 to 11. While the rulers present were watching Jesus, he observed the behaviour of their guests. Solomon had laid down a wise rule of etiquette at a feast when he said, "Put not forth thyself in the presence of the king, and stand not in the presence of great men. For it is better that it be said unto thee, Come up hither, than that thou shouldest be put lower in the presence of the prince whom thine eyes have seen." Proverbs 25, verse 6 and 7. The guests forgot this, and an unseemly scramble took place to get to the seats of honour. Jesus had a word for the guests, which taught them a better way, and embodied a deeper spiritual lesson. The parable Jesus put forth counselled one bidden at a feast not to take the most important seat. Were he required to move to one less important, it would be a shame to him. But if he took the lower seat and was then invited by the host to move upwards, he would be honoured by all present. Jesus puts the moral in a form of words he must have used several times. "Whosoever exalteth himself shall be abased, and he that humbleth himself shall be exalted." The words occur in Matthew 23, verse 12, Luke 18, verse 14, and in both these passages the import is that God will exalt those who are lowly. This application in these other references suggests that when used in Luke 14:11, the words must not be limited to the changes that men make. In fact, apart from considerations of social standing, men in general are not at all concerned about exalting the humble. Self-confidence and getting on are held in too high esteem by men generally for Christ's rule to be observed by them. The comment of Jesus leads us to look deeper. Did he see in the assertion of place by the guests any significance other than the pride and pushfulness of human nature? The deeper meaning of the ox in a pit of verse 5, and the obvious significance of the parable of the great supper that formed the next item of table talk, suggest that something more must be seen in the action of the guests than bad table manners. The political situation then existing in Israel provides a national application of the parable. The rulers were political schemers. The Pharisees were fervent patriots. All the nation were animated by spiritual pride. They regarded themselves as the special favourites of Providence, while the Gentiles were the uncircumcised, dogs and unclean. Instead of regarding their subjection to Gentiles as a well-deserved chastisement and seeking to amend their ways in a humble walk before God, doing justly in their dealings one with another, the Jews resented the discipline and strove to be rid of foreign rule. In their opposition to the Romans, the crisis was not long delayed. They sought by their own arrogant, thrusting efforts to secure the place they thought belonged to them. Little service was paid to the idea that God was the disposer of nations, even of his own nation. He was Lord of the feast. "Better were it," said Jesus, "for them to wait God's good pleasure, and in his exaltation of the nation they would have praise of all." In view of the deeper meanings that attach to so many of his lessons, we can well imagine that there would be many discussions for days among those who heard him concerning what he meant. Did his rebuke of petty social rudeness provoke anyone to wonder what ideas underlying it were in the mind of the teacher, whose saying seemed so simple but meant so much? Parable 69, Rules for Hosts, Luke 14, verses 12 to 14. After speaking to the unmannered guests, Jesus addressed the host in words that test the motives in hospitality. The words are not parabolic, but some of them form a text for the parable of the great supper that follows, in which Jesus repeats them. Since the parable of the supper reveals God's ways and purposes, the repetition of the language suggests that hosts who were concerned to please God should be moved by the same motives as God. "When thou makest a dinner or a supper," says Jesus, "call not to thy friends, nor thy brethren, neither thy kinsmen, nor thy rich neighbours, lest they also bid thee again, and a recompense be made to thee. But when thou makest a feast, call the poor, the maimed, the lame, the blind, and thou shalt be blessed, for they cannot recompense thee. For thou shalt be recompensed at the resurrection of the just." Chapter 14, verses 12 to 14. While the language must be understood literally, the idiom used must be recognized. While the words seem absolute, "call not these, but call these others," this absolute form was used idiomatically for emphasis. More exactly, we should say, "Do not so much call these as the others." A passage which might serve as a good illustration was the saying of Hosea, quoted many times by Jesus, "I will have mercy and not sacrifice." The saying was not a prohibition of sacrifice, but the inculcation of mercy as of greater importance. Jesus touches the springs of action that may move men in asking rich friends. There is delicate irony in the way Jesus states it, "lest they also bid thee again." They're able to ask back, and, says Jesus, there is a danger they might do it. Of course, Jesus means that the return visit was the real object in the first invitation being given. If, however, poor, maimed, lame, and blind are invited, the sincerity of the motive is unquestionable. The poor have not the means, and the others lack the physical ability to provide an entertainment. But the action, as Jesus shows, does not go unrewarded. God will recompense at the resurrection. In both halves of this saying of Jesus, reward is mentioned. In the first, it is sought of men, and the motive is unworthy. In the second, any reward expected is based upon faith in God, and that of itself cleanses the motive. Jesus does not eliminate reward from his teaching, as enthusiastic altruists try to exclude it from their philosophies. Jesus has a much better understanding of both human nature and of God's purpose. God will recompense, and even in the Lord's own case, "for the joy set before him, he endured the cross," Hebrews 12, verse 2. Who set before the Lord such an incentive of joy? Was it not the Father himself? The same God has invited the poor and the crippled to his feast. Parable 70, The Great Supper, Luke 14, verse 16 to 24. A pious remark provided the link between the counsel to the host and this parable. "Thou shalt be blessed in the resurrection," Jesus had said. A fellow guest echoes the words, "Blessed is he that shall eat bread in the kingdom of God," verse 15. The remark has been variously interpreted. Some regard it as sincere and discerning, others as merely an unctuous comment. From the context preceding and the lesson involved in the parable following, it would appear to be the most reasonable interpretation to regard the speaker as a self-satisfied guest who complacently thought he would be among the guests God would invite to his kingdom. His words are merely a pious platitude. The reply of Jesus is really a parable about guests, although generally described from words used in the parable itself as the Great Supper. A man made a great supper and invited many guests. When it was ready, he sent his servants with the customary second summons. Then the invited guests began to make excuses, whereupon in annoyance the host sent out into the lanes of the city for the poor and the maimed and the halt and the blind. Even then there was room for others. The servants were then sent into the highways to gather in others, that the house might be filled. At the same time, he declares that those first bidden shall not be allowed to partake of the supper. The meaning is clear, particularly in the light of New Testament history after the Lord's ascension. This parable, of course, closely resembles the parable of the marriage feast, Matthew 22, verse 1 to 14, which some writers persist in regarding as a double, the variations being mistakes of the gospel writers. But it has been truly said, like all good teachers, Jesus repeated himself, and like all good preachers, he never merely repeated himself. The kingdom is like a feast, a banquet, Isaiah 25, verse 6. And God has invited the Jews as his guests in the proclamation of his purpose through the prophets. The second invitation of the story conformed to current practice, but its mention reveals that the invited guests not only lacked good manners, but had contempt of the host. Tristram says that to omit the second summons would be a grievous breach of etiquette, equivalent to cancelling the previous, more general notification. To refuse the second summons would be an insult, which is equivalent among the Arab tribes to a declaration of war. The pretense of having accepted the invitation was, therefore, an aggravation of the offence. The excuses which were made were frivolous, transparently silly. One had bought a field and must see it. But when did a man buy a field without first seeing it? The next had bought oxen and must try them. He was, in fact, on the way to do so. What a confession of incompetence to buy and then try. But how slighting to advance so lame an excuse. The third man had what seemed a better case. The law did give certain liberties for a year when a man married, Deuteronomy 24, verse 5. But the liberties did not annul social customs. The host was not, by such trumpery excuses, to be changed from his purpose. The men were unworthy. Others should be invited. The streets and lanes of the city were to be searched for poor and crippled. In the application, the first invitations were to the rulers. The second, still within the confines of the city, referred to the publicans and sinners who responded to the invitation. The counterpart of the extension of the invitation to the men of the highways is manifestly the offer of salvation to Gentiles, as Paul said to the Jews of Antioch in Pisidia. It was necessary that the word of God should first have been spoken to you. But seeing ye put it from you, and judge yourselves unworthy of everlasting life, lo, we turn to the Gentiles. Acts 13, verse 46. The saying in the parable that the people of the highways should be compelled to come to the feast has been given a strangely perverse application. It has been used to justify persecution of heretics and compulsion to join a church. How manifestly inappropriate, as the meaning of the words of Jesus is clear. No such compulsion would be needed to bring starving people to a free dinner. Besides which, a single servant would not be sent to bring in a company by physical force. The compulsion of the gospel is that which springs from conviction based on reasoning out of the scriptures. The parable is part of the indictment of the Jewish nation, and is also an additional rebuke to the Pharisee who had invited Jesus. The nation was full of excuses for not responding to God's invitations. They were to be therefore excluded, while the invitation would be passed on to others. The Gentiles have heard the word of the gospel and have believed.